7, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. Always good to see you. The three of us are together again. It's kind of a rare occasion, but I'm glad that we've been able to make it happen the last several shows. So,
even more rare is none of us are on the road right now.
Yeah. I canceled the trip, so I'm on the road next week and the week after and the week after. So you're going to be chasing me around the country to do shows. So. And I know, John, you're going to be out and about as well.
Yeah, I just came back from six weeks, which I only came back for 2 days to change suitcase on after week number four.
Yep, I know it is the busy travel season, and I just picked up three new accidents, so I'm going to be traveling on those, and just never ends. But we got kind of a different show today. We're not going to dissect any accidents, but we are going to talk about an issue that we think collectively does have some sort of negative influence on safety. And that is user fees at airports and the fact that this is a growing issue that more airports are now starting to implement user fees. And the question is, one, why, given the fact that these airports are getting federal money through the AIP program? The question is it enough? And if it isn't enough, why isn't it enough? But two, what are these user fees going to do for those airports that support currently general aviation flight training? And are they trying to chase the flight training organizations away? Because now you have students who are doing multiple touch and goes. They're on that runway, you know, for an hour and a half doing their thing. And that in and of itself is going to increase the cost of flight training, and flight training is already expensive. So with that being said, Todd, I know that you've done a lot of research initially on this subject. Why don't you kick us off with a discussion, and then we'll throw out our two cents, because we were having a bit of a spirited discussion before we got on.
Well,
we
all started out with some news items out there about an airport in Mesa, Arizona, Falcon Field, implementing landing fees starting in later in 2026. And the question arose immediately in my head is, oh, gee, do they have a lot of flight training going on there? Turns out there's a lot of flight training activity. And I thought, my immediate thought was, how will this impact not just aircraft in general, but specifically training aircraft and the trainees, many of whom are doing this to upgrade themselves to go into a flying career, and every dollar counts. And from looking at the documentation that we were able to obtain from Falcon Field, which is in Mesa, Arizona, for a fixed-wing aircraft that's based at the airport, they're going to be charged $20.35 per landing. Now, the good thing is, semi-good thing, if you're based at the airport, the first 10 landings a month are free. But if you're a training organization, flight school, let's say, those 10 landings will be eaten up fairly quickly. So most of the month, whoever's flying that airplane, if they're doing any kind of landing, even touch and goes, suddenly, whatever their costs are, it's higher. Now, all of us who've all flown or been around aviation for a long time know that aviation, even at the lowest level, quote unquote lowest level, is not cheap. You want to buy a brand new Cessna 172, the kind of plane that I fly, you might have to lay out $500,000. You would think, half a million for Cessna 172? Welcome to aviation in 2026. But for the average person who's doing this either for a vocation or an avocation, you got to look at the bottom line. And as we were discussing off the air, if you have a situation where suddenly every touch and go is going to cost you $20, $25, whatever it is, what sort of decisions will you make where you're thinking, oh, I'm saving money? But in fact, you might be putting yourself into a situation that you don't have to because you're spending extra time going to and from some location, or you and all your other flight training compatriots are suddenly flying into the same previously underutilized airport to do your touch and go training.
Well, you bring up a couple of points. One, is that going to apply to all weight categories for aircraft, all the way down to the smallest aircraft, or are there any carve-outs?
Well, in the two airports we're looking at here, Mesa Gateway Airport and Falcon Field, which are both in Mesa, Arizona, Falcon Field didn't seem to have a carve-out. Every airplane down to zero weight would have some sort of charge, whereas Mesa Gateway seems to exclude aircraft under 12,500 pounds. Now, I haven't talked to a flight school in either one of those places, so I don't know if there are special carve-outs for them. But on the surface, if I am a GA pilot, I'm flying into the Phoenix area or flying through the Phoenix area, and I do my basic research, I find out there's a landing fee. Well, hey, if I'm just flying through one time only, I might take that cost. But what if I'm someone who regularly, for whatever reason, is flying into these airports to keep up my practice talking with air traffic control, etc., and suddenly that thing that I've been doing normally for years is going to cost me money I'd rather not spend. Is it going to change my habits in such a way that might bite me in the backside later on?
The cost of flight training, like you said, is sky high right now. And with gas prices escalating, and now you're going to put a user fee on top of it, are we going to discourage pilot starts? We've been through this phase before where the cost went, exorbitant, the training starts went down, and everybody was concerned. Now we're into a pilot shortage. And of course, it's very expensive to get that training, even through a pilot factory or a university that has an aviation program. This is just going to escalate those types of programs. Now, the flight schools will have to go to the airport and say, look, out of your 100 plus thousand operations a year that gives your air traffic controllers at this airport their complexity so that they can get a decent paycheck, you kill that business. Now you have less air traffic controllers, and it has a ripple effect. It doesn't just isolate to the airport. It incorporates all the people that work at that airport. Airports depend on fuel sales. Well, now all of a sudden number fuel sales go down because you have less flights, or people are going to go pound sand. I'm going to go over to Joe Schmucatelli International Airport, where they don't have a landing fee, and I'll get my fuel over there and I'll do all of my flight training over there, and I'll just take off and land at this airport. So, I mean, that kind of escalates the risk. And then, of course, you brought up the fact that with all the flight training going on, now, you got Joe Pilot, Joe Flight Instructor, Bill Flight Instructor, Bob Flight Instructor, taking their students over to an uncontrolled field that was underutilized to begin with. And now you've escalated the risk there because one, it is an uncontrolled field. Two, it's the wild, wild west. While we hope that everybody is making appropriate position calls and being where they're supposed to be in the traffic pattern, we know that, if it's a left-hand traffic pattern, we got guys bailing out of there to the right, flying a non-standard traffic pattern, entering a non-standard traffic pattern, flying straight in, not making position calls, things like that. And now we've escalated the risk for a mid-air collision. So this one little thing has a detrimental ripple effect if it's not handled properly.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, doing all your basic training at a non-towered airport, right, and then you go off and try to get a job with an airline. Last night here in New York City, we had a regional jet with a very young voice on the radio landing in LaGuardia, call for clearance, which he got, but he was on the frequency for JFK.
Yeah.
All right, so you had a controller also making a mistake. And as we three of us know, every accident is a chain of events. It's not just one thing. And they already got two mistakes right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's
out of the chain.
Yeah, and again, you start doing a majority of your flight training at an uncontrolled airport, you're going to have a very difficult time operating in Class B, Class C airspace, or any airspace that requires you to talk on the radio and communicate effectively. So these landing fees, while I understand what they are for, because a lot of times these airports aren't getting money from the government through the AIP program, they've got to pay for the operation of the airport. They got to pay for snow plowing. They got to pay for, you know, cutting the grass and maintaining the hangars and maintaining the ramps and all of those things that keep an airport running. But, you know, some of that money comes from fuel sales. So if you have a decrease in fuel sales, you're going to have less money that you can apply to the airport. Of course, a lot of these airports reside in counties or cities. The question is, how much money are they contributing, given the fact that the return on investment that a city or a county contributes to an airport, a general aviation type airport, you know, should be factored in, because these airports are used for medical transport. They are used for police operations, electronic news gathering, you know, staging, you know, the airport that my office is at, Rocky Mountain Metro, it's staging for wildfire season. We already got two helicopters at the airport, and we'll have probably a DC-9 and a BAE-146 here standing by because we've had such a dry winter. Fire season will be in full swing a lot sooner than normal. So, you know, it provides such a public service benefit to have the airport there that the counties and cities should be supporting it. I'm not sure that, you know, that kind of information is really exploited. And again, you brought up another point, Todd. You know, it's, you know, we don't want you here because the city fathers, you know, have to deal with all the complaints by all the people that live around the airport because of airport noise. And if people would just stop thinking about airplanes and helicopters as being noisemakers and listen to it as cha-ching, 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 because every time that aircraft flies over your head, that tax revenue coming off fuel sales and flight training fees goes to lowering your taxes. So, I mean, there's a lot of benefit there, but unfortunately we don't, or a lot of the counties and cities don't exploit that. The airports definitely don't do a very good job explaining that. And now everybody thinks that these airports are a detriment, and now you throw a fee on top of it. Is that really a fee to improve the airport or discourage people from using the airport?
And you're bringing up a related point in that new airports are rare. Old airports aren't. In Arizona, just like with most of the Southwest, most of the aviation infrastructure with respect to airports has some of it, or all of its roots in the military, especially through World War II. And many of the airports in and around the Phoenix area are exactly like that. Of course, Phoenix was a lot smaller 80 years ago during World War II. So what used to be way the heck and gone out of town are now in the middle of town or middle of suburbs. But that brings up the other point, what you said earlier. This is about money, in a sense. The ownership of the airport gives you some insight as to what the motivations are. Falcon Field apparently is run by the city of Mesa, whereas Mesa Gateway is run by an airport authority, of which I believe the city of Mesa is part of it. So my understanding, just from that thumbnail sketch, is the city of Mesa had a lot to do with the decision at Falcon Field, maybe a little bit to do with the decision at Mesa Gateway. What's the motivation? If you're run by the city, you're a city department. What are the civil service aspects of who's working at the airport? What are the local tax effects? Do you have a lot of local residents who are also working at the airport, and this is adding to Mesa's tax revenue? Or are they all out of towners, and you really don't care if they get unemployed because, hey, they're taking their money out of town anyway? I don't know that. Most local people would have a hard time figuring that out. And you might have low-level arguments at city council meetings or county council meetings saying, hey, not in my backyard, you're making too much noise. On the other hand, no, this is good for the community. It's been here forever. We should love our flying population. I prefer that argument, by the way. But
A lot
this
of
is a
these small
comp.
communities, these airports are part of their lifeline. So and I'm familiar with those airports that we're talking about. They're big cities. They have their own infrastructure, their own hospitals. But if you got a serious heart attack, you're going to be wanting to go to Phoenix. And if you have it in the afternoon, you're not getting to Phoenix on the road.
Yeah. And so while I presume there'll be carve outs and exceptions and that kind of stuff,
I was
again,
looking for that, Greg. I have the documents that Todd pulled down, and as you were talking, I was looking at it, and I don't see a lot of carve-outs.
yeah.
there are carve outs
And
for government, police work, emergency, etc., but not a carve out for particular user groups that I could see. For example, people who are general aviation pilots, flying small aircraft. Yes, the price is less at Phoenix Gateway, but it seems also there's a lot more general aviation activity going on at Falcon Field, where the fee is for everybody.
Well,
And the
and
more general question, if you're going to make money, and they claim it's going to make like 1.2 million at Falcon just on the under 6,000 pound airplanes, if you're making that 1.2 million, is that money going to be put into improvements that will make life and flying better and easier for that particular subpopulation of airport users?
wait, I'm
And when
looking
you
at the Mesa Gateway, and that's on any given day, how many limousines or black cars do you see come up to the airport on the general aviation side? A lot. Just to pick somebody up, the $270 charge. Right? Just to pick up a drop off.
Yeah, so when and while the charter operators will pass all of that on to their client, who's chartering that airplane, these other costs will be passed on to either the pilot owner or the user group. And when you have an airport that has four, five, six large flight schools at it, I mean, that's a heck of a lot of revenue to begin with. But again, is that going to drive those types of operations away? They may stay based at a place like a Scottsdale or a Mesa, but they aren't going to operate there. They're going to fly off into the abyss, into a practice area, and they're going to go find a grass strip. They're going to go find an uncontrolled field to operate at, where they don't have enough operations to really charge a user fee and things like that. And that's where they will be. But that's where safety becomes a concern, because now you're going to flood these little airports that may have had 10,000 operations a year. Now they're going to have 50,000 operations a year.
And it's not
Yeah,
going to be something that'll
with no
be
control
obvious
tower
to the
yet.
public. Even to us inside the business, it might not be obvious at first, because what if you have a couple accidents at smaller airports in some section of the country that you wouldn't have had before? Well, first you have to figure out, is this different from what happened a year or 2 years ago? And unless there's something drawing your attention to it, I might not pay attention to it. Now, if you have two GA training aircraft crashing, that's one thing. But if they're both from the same flight school, happen a week apart at the same remote airport, well, yeah, that will attract my attention, and maybe I'll start asking those questions. What I'm saying
Yeah.
is, ask the questions now. Think about what the impacts will be, to the user groups that are out there. And you might still make the same decision, but make a more informed decision all around.
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
And then the question is accountability of all this revenue that's collected. Because these user fees are going directly to the airport, and while, you know, they are public entities, you know, accountability for that money. Because if people don't see runways being improved, taxiways being improved, hangars being built, which you go to any general aviation airport, there's probably a backlog of people waiting on a list to build a hangar or at least get it into a hangar. Is this money going to be used to encourage that kind of development and things like that? It's one thing to collect the fees to, quote, maintain the airport, but what does that mean? Man, I got you guys at a loss for words.
Almost. There's one gentleman amongst the three of us who's had way more experience dealing with the public policy, political, and political personality side of things. So, John, what can you say about what's the mentality of the decision makers at the mostly county and local level who are making these kinds of decisions? Is it any different from how decision-making is made in smoky back rooms in Washington, D.C.?
Usually not. You know, as you were talking about that, the process, I was thinking, I wonder how many employees the airport has. You know, the municipal airports that are owned by the town sometimes find themselves with a lot of extra employees, so to speak. You know, that... The mayor would like to get his nephew a job for the summer or some of that stuff, which gets paid out of the airport till. I mean, I've worked in big cities, Boston, New York, Baltimore, Washington, and that was clearly alive and well in those locations. You know, some politicians would have friends' kids get jobs all summer long. So I wonder if that's a factor here as well.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see if the flight schools are going to start lobbying these airports to say, look, you know, we bring you a lot of revenue. We're based here at your airport, and now you're going to charge us a fee. I don't think so. We're just going to leave. That'll be more of an idle threat than anything else. But, you know, where you have the ATP type flight schools or some of the other big flight schools, Spartan and others, they aren't going to just pick up their tent and move. That's a huge process. But because they bring so much revenue, not only to the airport, but to the surrounding community, you know, the question is, is a county, is a city or whatever going to accommodate those types of flight schools to continue that business? Or are they going to hold steadfast and go, every time those wheels touch that runway, you're paying?
Greg,
Todd, what was the Midwestern school that was at this airport?
Okay, University of North Dakota, I believe, was one of the ones that had a Falcon Field location. Let me
So
check
yeah,
that.
they're bringing their students down because of the weather in North Carolina, North Dakota in the wintertime. So they're bringing in, that's hotel revenue, it's vehicle, most likely rental cars, or even if they drive down, it's buying gas, using all the services. I mean, that's a lot of money that comes into that.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, you listen to the little aircraft. I mean, I got airplanes flying over my head all the time doing flight training. ATP's got a big operation at JEFCO, or what used to be JEFCO. It's now Rocky Mountain Metro. But I mean, they're doing multi-engine training over my house every morning, starting at 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't mind it. I mean, I'm listening to that. I'm into aviation. But I'm thinking, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. You can drone out there all you want because that money is going to find its way back to me somehow, some way. So, does it take a little discipline to think of life that way, especially when you're not in aviation and you're not used to it? And, I mean, yeah, jets make noise, but they bring in high revenue people for a variety of different reasons. There's a lot of goods and services that are brought to these general aviation airports that service the public. You take that away, or you discourage it because you're charging, I mean, $20 every time the wheels touch the runway doesn't sound like much, except like you said, Todd, if they are charging $20 every time I do a touch and go, I've done 10 touch and goes. Guess what? That's another $200 on that particular day on a flight that already cost me with a flight instructor and the cost of an airplane, well over $200. And now that day's flying is close to $500. That is not realistic.
Not in the least. I want to go, before we go off, I want to go back to that pilot making a mistake. Now, I remember while I was at the board, we had an airplane in Patrick Henry Field in Norfolk, have a similar arrangement like JFK and LaGuardia. And I remember an airplane that actually landed there with talking to the wrong tower. And those guys got in a good bit of trouble with the FAA. And I kind of remember another one that I wasn't involved with. Did you handle any of those?
I handled them as a field investigator. Because you'd have these, runway incursions or near midairs or guys landing at the wrong airport. If there was no damage or anything, we'd talk to the FAA, find out, what happened, why it happened, what the corrective action is. The bigger thing here is you got a professional pilot. I mean, there is a process of verifying frequency. And then, oh, by the way, aren't you listening to see who's on frequency going JFK Tower versus LaGuardia? I mean, you would think that, somebody'd be listening to that going, why are they talking to JFK on this frequency?
Yeah, it was late at night, apparently, last night. So
Yeah,
maybe.
but again, John, it's all about operational discipline. We preach it all the time. We talk about it all the time. We dissect it in accidents all the time. These guys get paid a pretty good buck to do it right. Yeah, can humans, make a mistake, and we're not infallible? I understand all of that because I've been in the business long enough, along with the two of you. But the fact is, I know, now you got to look at, well, is it fatigue? Is it complacency? Is it distraction? How in the hell did they get on the wrong frequency and then initiate a radio call? And oh, by the way, where is all that pretty stuff that's right in front of them that has a nice magenta line going, here's where you're going?
Yeah. Well,
Now,
I
before I
they
give
played
my
the tower
pitch.
tape, and the his communications with switching over the tower, they didn't give him a frequency. So I don't, that's another mistake that was made in there.
Wait, you're saying you told him to switch the tower, but didn't tell him what frequency to switch to?
Yep.
Okay, but these guys have reviewed a plate. They always have the approach plates out. That's part of their briefing. All you have to do is look down and go, man, why are we on 127.35 instead of 126.50? I mean, it's trust but verify.
Yep. There's no excuse for it, no matter what, but
yeah,
there might be some mitigation in there.
Yeah.
Well, there is an excuse for an error I think I made earlier. I think I said that the University of North Dakota program was at Falcon Field, or actually at Mesa Gateway. But still, the question would be relevant because I don't know if UND is doing practice touch and goes at Falcon Field and have to change things around. But more to the
Yeah,
point.
you're going in. You're going to go to airports where you can shoot approaches, because not every airport has multiple approaches, especially for a check rider training. So you're going to go to those. Now, do you fly to a missed approach? Yeah, but you may fly to a full stop landing, and so again, now on a cross country where you send a solo student on their first cross country and they land at three airports that all happen to be charging a fee, all of a sudden now you've added another 100, 150 bucks to that training flight.
Which means that pilot won't be able to afford the $100 lunch at the third airport.
That's right. Exactly. They'll have to go hungry or eat out of a vending machine.
Down to McDonald's, which isn't cheap anymore.
No, it isn't. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and what the ripple effect across the country will be with other airports, other general aviation airports, seeing this as, well, this could be a really good revenue generator. So who knows? But again, what's the return on investment? What are people, if I pay a fee and I'm just a guy transiting through, I could care less what they do at Deer Valley. But for the people that are based there or fly there all the time, they're going to want to see that money put to good use and, for improvements and that kind of stuff. So it's going to be real interesting to see how all this plays out.
And AOPA was quite active in this fee schedule. And I think they were successful at one of the airports to get an exemption for their General Aviation Training Act for aircraft, but not at both.
Yeah, well, look at Oshkosh. Look at all of these. Look at Frederick, where AOPA is based, and they have fly-ins. And now you have are you going to discourage fly-ins because everybody that flies in, especially in a J3 Cub, is now going to be paying $20 just to put their wheels on the pavement. So while it doesn't sound like a lot, and people go, well, it's not that big a hardship, it really is to some people.
Yeah, one trip, because you already have your license and you're just flying from point A to B, the fee is nothing. But a student that's doing touch and goes for an hour, hour and a half, it's going to impact his training.
Yeah, exactly. So with that, Todd, I will leave you with our second to the last word.
Well, it is a second to the last word, but extras, because you mentioned earlier about, lobbying your airport about not changing fees and whatnot. And I say the lobbying should also include lobbying to us. If you're a viewer and you have questions, or especially after seeing this show, write to us at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. Give us your questions. Why? Because we like questions. We like giving out answers, especially correct ones. And it also gives us ideas and inspirations for new shows. And for you businesses out there that want to put your product or service in front of our audience, especially an audience that's keenly aware of the financial aspects of aviation, again, you can write to us, but do so at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. We'll have a conversation with you. Might be able to do something with it. And my second to last word that's not pitching one thing or another for our show is make noise. If you see something at your local airport that you don't like, figure out who's making the decisions. If you have a question about where's the money going, well, I hope they have some accounting and accountability. And if you ask that question, they actually give you an answer. If they give you an answer that you don't like, that's one thing. If they refuse to give you an answer, that's even worse. And with that, we'll take it over to the master himself, John, for the last word.
And as usual, the subject that just keeps on going because people just keep on making mistakes. If you're going to go flying, do a pre-flight twice, not a pre-flight, pre-plan your flight twice, once at home or at the hotel, and then once again at the airport. When you get out to your airplane, do a very detailed walk around. We still see problems. I just flew this past weekend a couple of flights, and I was watching some business aircraft pilots do their walk arounds. And I wish I had more time. I would have had a little discussion with them. But anyway, it wasn't the best walk around that I've ever seen. And, you know, there's still a lot of airplanes up in the air. So when you get in the air, you got to put that head on a swivel. And just keep hearing of so many close calls, so many people saying that he cut in front of me, but I saw him and you know, and he took evasive action, minor action, not drastic, but he changed course a little bit to make sure he had some elbow room. You know, so please, please pay attention up there and fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetexas@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing Program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.